Alright, so I think we're on, it's maybe the third week we've been going through the topic. You know, before this was honoring one another, and then we've also been focusing on what joyful submission looks like. And so we're nearing the end, and there's going to be a couple of main points, main things that we're going to address. I would kind of sum them up, two main words, right? We're going to address what does fear have to do with this topic, and then also the idea of exceptions, right? Meaning that we'll talk about different scriptures, and then maybe, hopefully we'll have a good discussion on application. So looking at like some case scenarios, some examples. Is this submission? Is this not? What would it look like to have a good submission? All right, if you got the handout, we are on, I think, let's go back, page six, if you want to flip there. And just to recap, we've been wrapping up kind of a study of one passage in 1 Peter. So go ahead and flip to 1 Peter. I'll be calling on either volunteers or voluntelling.
Yes.
First Peter, and so last time we went through the end of chapter 2 and 3, and we worked our way into verses 1 through 6 of chapter 3. Okay. We kind of backed in last time how chapter 2 and 13 through the end of the chapter, he's talking about submission to the authorities, servants to masters, the submission of Christ's example to all that God allowed him, the suffering that he endured. And in that context, he says, likewise. Okay. So I have something we want to read, chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. Go for it.
Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they, without a word, may be won by the conduct of their wives. And they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror.
Yeah. So we get quite a bit here, and we're going to focus in on Sarah. Right? So Sarah's mentioned here at the end. So let's go back and look at a passage where we see Sarah. It's in your handout here on Genesis 12, 4 through 5. Tanner, we get that.
So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took Sarai his wife and Lot his nephew, and all their possessions which they had accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran. And they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan.
Yeah. So what do we notice? Let's look at the First Peter passage and the passage of Genesis, and let's just go through. What do we notice about Sarah? What do we learn about her?
Well, the Lord spoke to Abraham mm-hmm. and said, leave Mesopotamia and travel 1,500 miles away to Canaan, because I'm going to give you the land there. And so Abraham had a conversation with Sarah and said, guess who I talked to today? And guess what he told me to do? And guess what we're doing tomorrow? And she went.
So it's hard to imagine, right?
Yeah, just what that conversation was like.
Okay, wait, what?
That feels like a big ask.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she went. Yeah, we know that she went. Anything else that we know about?
We don't know what she thought about it.
Yeah, there's a lot left out, right? We don't know a lot of this.
That she was obedient,
mm-hmm.
apparently.
Mm-hmm. So we kind of have to fill in the blanks in terms of what that conversation looked like. There's
mm-hmm.
a lot of... I find that somewhat helpful. Right? I don't know what your husband-wife dialogue looks like at home, right? But it doesn't have to, there's not a real set rubric, playbook here, but we know that the Lord told him to go, and Abram said, yes, we're going, and he went. What about from the First Peter passage? What kind of insight do we get about Sarah?
She obeyed him and called him Lord.
Yeah. This is not a common. Carissa does not go around calling me Lord. We had a conversation this weekend about how. One of the difficulties for me is that I think we talked about that in the worldly sense, authority is really associated with competence, and the most competent or skilled person is the one who's in authority. And in the biblical sense, it's the authority is assigned to the husband, regardless of how competent he is in comparison with his wife. And so oftentimes, either I'm tempted to believe that, I'm more competent, because I have the authority, or when I know that I'm not, right, making mistakes, well, I can't lead because I don't have the competence to do so. And so, doesn't say anything about how that she believed anything else about Abraham, that he was more skilled or more knowledgeable, but that she did. Called him Lord. Anything else? What about the end there of verse 6?
She wasn't afraid.
Yeah, she wasn't afraid.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what we're going to talk about is, what role do you think fear can have in making it difficult to be submissive? And I wanted to maybe think about this, challenge the husbands as well. We've talked about how we're all in roles of subjection. Subjection, submissiveness to the governing authorities, to our bosses at work, or to the elders of our church. Or we have these roles, right? And what does fear do to that ability to submit yourself to that leadership?
You might be afraid that they're making a poor decision.
Yeah, right? We can be afraid that our leaders are making poor decisions, right? Or unwise or foolish. And if they do, what does that mean? What's going to happen?
They're going to want to seize control for themselves.
Yeah.
The decision goes
yep.
a different way.
So oftentimes that fear can lead to control,
mm-hmm.
right? We want to control it because, right, we know that their decisions affect us, right? The decisions of our government affects us. The decisions of our husbands will affect the wives and so on.
Yeah.
What else? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I see this in our kids, especially when they were young. Like
mm-hmm.
I had one child who was convinced that when we dropped her off in the nursery, it was a permanent abandonment. She worked herself into a froth that we were never going to come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so she fought like anything to keep herself from going into the nursery. And it's like there's this force field and she just planted her feet. you are not going to make me do this. Mm-hmm. I will not give up on this. You know, it was just this, and it was irrational, mm-hmm. but it made sense to her. And it was a, when they were the most fearful was when they were the most difficult to bring under mm-hmm. submission. Mm-hmm.
And why do you think why do you think that fear comes up? I mean, why do we have those fears?
It's a lack of trust.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is that the opposite of that, right? The opposite of that would be trust. Mm-hmm. Right? When we release control, we choose to reject those fears, we put our trust, right?
This really applies in this situation, or, mm-hmm. but the fear, the things that you've listed there being poor or unwise or foolish, mm-hmm. if you fear those actions of your authority that you're submitting to normally, but say you have cause or reason to believe that this won't work and it will go awry and you won't.
Yeah.
You want it known and you rebel. It's, we don't always know the intentions of the authority. And, and especially in the case of the Lord, there's no way to know. Mm-hmm. But it more than likely won't be the outcome when you go and don't fall into the submission and line. And that, I think, you know, if there's a fault to blame on the authority, then they should, by their definition, they should own that.
Yeah.
If things go haywire.
Yeah.
But it more than likely is going to happen if you choose to rebel. I think there's some. It'll definitely happen if you take that action mm-hmm. and don't submit, but it might work out mm-hmm. if you see it through and see something from their perspective. Mm-hmm. And that leads into understanding, because if you've acted through their process or with what's being charged of you, you can see mm-hmm. from that eye, and you have now lived it mm-hmm. in a way. Does that make any
I think so. You seem to be addressing that. There's a focus. Sometimes we focus on whether or not the authority's decision is best or right, and then there's the sense in which, what is my role to play in submitting to that or not? And our choices, I mean, will have an effect not only on the authority, but on ourselves and then in our circumstances. And I think, do you think that these fears are usually based valid or not? There's sometimes where we have valid reasons to be.
Sure.
Yeah, right?
It's also important to notate, like, even if you have valid reasons, it doesn't mean you don't get to submit. Yeah. Even if you're concerned or fearful of things, you're still called to submit as from a wife's perspective.
Yeah, well, like in the First Peter passage, right, if we look back, what are the examples? I mean, was he saying, no, don't worry, these aren't really rational fears. Nothing bad's going to happen. Just trust him. Yeah. No, that's not. So he specifically says, right, when he talks about servants and masters, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. And he gives the example of Christ, all the suffering that he went through in submission. And then what's he say specifically to wives about what? What kind of husbands? Unbelieving husbands. It says, even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word. So more than likely, he's saying specifically, just know that we are called to submit to our leaders, to our authorities, to our husbands, knowing that we're going to suffer as a part of that submission.
Yeah, and for what I've seen, I think women have the hardest time submitting when they have a noble reason not to, mm-hmm. which is when they believe that the husband's decision will impact the children. And I think it's probably true that mothers have a better sense of what's good or bad mm-hmm. for the children than the fathers do.
Mm-hmm.
They know that. And if they sense the husband is doing something that's not in the best interest of the children, I mean, mm-hmm. that's when, I think that's when the fear is not,
yeah.
you know, it's not a me personally thing. It's me representing the broader interest of the kids.
Yeah.
So I have to defend the kids from
yeah.
their father.
Yeah. So that's a good, I think a good transition. If you want to look at, there's a few really good questions on the top of page 7. And what we're talking about now is, you know that, let's say that you know you're supposed to submit, but you're in a situation where you truly believe that the authority is making, you want to give some input into their decision making. This could be you as an employee with your boss, right? We talked about. Could be you as a citizen in the government. You're in the church and you're, right? But if you're called to submit, but you want to help, right? You want to help. What is the right way? Does biblical teaching make women into doormats or all people in submission just to be walked over? And how would a wise husband involve his wife in decision making? So what would that look like? How could you address if you've got a little bit of maybe fear going on and you want to still be submissive? So husbands and wives, women, what kind of input could we give her?
Well, I think fear can be indicative of not placing enough trust in God.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's sovereign. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's often, I don't know, for me, I always kind of picture it this way where, you know, you have these intermediate, right? Usually we're down here, sometimes we're in one of these roles as, you know, the boss, master, or you might be part of the government, or you might be a parent, or you might be a husband, or you might be an elder, right? Or whatever. And like you're saying, oftentimes we may have a valid reason to fear the choices and decisions. But ultimately, right, like you're saying, it's a lack of trust in God's ability to reign over those authorities.
I was going to say that. It's just like,
okay. He's got this little signal, and he's going to say something.
Yes.
So you got to be careful.
I'm
he's like bidding at an auction.
For later. Yeah.
Sold. Yeah.
I think as far as question number one,
yeah.
does it make women into doormats? That's not the intention, but if it was abused, it could.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But in the second question, how would a wise husband involve his wife in decision-making? It's kind of like we discussed last week with Lauren. You know, she was mentioning that sometimes she has a difficulty submitting when she doesn't understand the context or the reason.
Mm-hmm.
So a wise husband could understand his wife and know that, you know, hey, we're moving 1,500 miles away, might not fly.
Right.
Unless you say, hey, God and I had this talk, and this
mm-hmm.
is what he's told
mm-hmm.
me, and this is where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe a little bit more context than this is what we're doing and
mm-hmm.
get in line. So,
yeah.
Yes, she could become a doormat.
Yes.
It was abused, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
She was probably totally chill with the idea.
Right.
That's my thought. Just kidding. No, that's, I'm all guys.
What else do you guys think? How, what's that look like? What's some practical things, what husbands and wives, how we can make that relationship work well, where they're both equally, in a sense, not having the same role, but equally participating, leading, and helping to make good decisions. What are some things that...
Both understanding what, you know, direction they're trying to go.
Like, common goal.
Yeah, like, you know, how much do you know about this? How much do I know about this? Let's brainstorm and just talk about it.
Yeah.
Whereas to one, you know, having the idea and going forward with it without involving the spouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hear my thoughts from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So
talking it over,
actively,
having a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Very much.
Yeah, I think sometimes you have to defer to expertise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some areas like, let's say a husband and wife are having a dispute about what to do with their tax return. They get $2,000, and the wife is like, we need to pay off the mortgage. And the husband's like, no, we can't do that. The compound interest would be better to put it in mm-hmm. our retirement account.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that, you know what I'm saying? And so you can go back and forth, and he can maybe explain it, you know, why in the long run it's better.
Mm-hmm.
And but if he's a financial planner,
mm-hmm.
right, there is a certain amount of expertise that he would have that even if it doesn't make sense, you go along with it. But I think
yeah.
On the other side, like if the woman has a career in like medicine, what should I do in this situation, or even expertise with the kids, it's, yeah, I think there's a wisdom in drawing upon that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So I think a lot of these relationships, it's not like the knowledge base for every decision is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So it's not, so there are times where you try to explain, but it's just not.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think
it's,
that
ultimately it's,
yeah.
you, there's an expertise the husband has or even the wife has that the other person doesn't.
And I don't know if you guys have experienced this too, but I think that idea, you know, it's like the saying that a good leader surrounds himself with people who are smarter than him to,
yeah.
right? And there's a sense in which you have the discussion and, you know, the husband or the wife at any given time may have a little bit more knowledge or expertise in that area.
Yeah.
And you're oftentimes reaching that decision together, mutually.
Yeah.
But oftentimes it's just that final, where does the responsibility lie or rest, whether it goes good or bad,
mm-hmm.
you know. Okay, so then let's get into, right, exceptions, right? What parameters limit the wife's scope of obedience, right? So Colossians 3:18 right there. What's that say? Josh, you got it?
Wives, be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got these scenarios, but I thought we would just go first and read through these scriptures. So as is fitting to the Lord, okay? And then I need some people to look up some scriptures. So let's see. Let's start in the back. Noah, can you get Hebrews 10:25? David, how about Proverbs 1, that passage? David in the back here. Come on. 1:7-8.
You can take it if
you want. No, he wants it. He wants it. Lauren, you want to get Acts 5, that passage? And then going across, Jared, you want to get Galatians 6:1? And Leah, how about Ephesians 4:25? Okay. So, right, the idea is wives are submit as is what's fitting in the Lord. Okay, so what do we have for Hebrews 10:25?
Not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another and all the more as you see the day drawing near.
Right. So we're commanded that we're not to cease, not to give up meeting together. Okay? Let's keep going. Proverbs 1:7-8.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching.
Mm-hmm. And Lord, Acts 5:28-29.
Saying, we strictly charged you not to teach in his name, yet here you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching, and you intend to bring this man's blood upon us. But Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men.
Yeah, so we get a very kind of a clear principle here, right, that, right, our exceptions, right, we can disobey any of these, and we are commanded, really, to disobey those authorities when? This is an easy
sin.
One. Yeah, sin. Yeah. So if at any time these authorities command you to do something that you're prohibited from, or to stop doing something that you're commanded to do, right? Both would be sin. And we see the example with the apostles as a negative, right? Stop doing this. No, God commands us to do this, right? And let's keep going and get a couple other examples. What about Galatians 6:1?
Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you be tempted.
Mm-hmm. And then Leah, what about 4:25?
Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another.
Right. So in these examples, right, if the husband says, I forbid you to go to church, to talk to the children about God, to reprove me, or to tell anyone about my sin, right, we can see we're clearly commanded that the wife should not, cannot do that. Right? And that's being obedient to the Lord. Okay? So I think one of the things that comes up then, let's say that a wife's in that situation, right? Husband is commanding her to do something she shouldn't or to stop doing something she should. She needs to obey the Lord. How does she address or what can she do to address her husband, right? She's got to submit to this man, but he's in sin. So let's look at a few different passages and see if that helps us. I think this often helps us, too, to think about the discussion that often comes in is that submission is a place that breeds abuse. That if a wife is submissive, there's no recourse, there's no help. She has to just suffer and be abused. Okay, so this kind of maybe have that in mind, too, as we read through and think about what can a wife do when we have a husband who's unbelieving or acting in sin. Okay. So let's keep going. Jack, you want to get that Matthew 18 passage?
If you, brother, sins, go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. But if he does not listen to you, take one or two more with you, so that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every fact may be confirmed. If he refuses to listen, then tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly I say to you, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven.
Okay, so think about that in the context of a marriage, right? The sinning brother is the husband. Okay, so what would this look like? Husband is in sin. What's going to happen?
Let's say he's taking opioids or something like that, about outside of prescription. Like, he's really getting into drugs.
Okay. What should we do?
And maybe, into this, you're supposed to speak to him in private about it before.
Okay.
If he doesn't listen, then to go to the church with it.
Yeah, and by church, we want to remember that. Let's say the wife goes to her husband and talks to him about it, and he doesn't listen, doesn't change, right? So then the next stage was to be to bring what?
Witnesses,
other people, right? Maybe other husbands, maybe other men in the church, people in his Bible study, maybe the elders of the church, right? They kind of up the level of accountability. Okay? Then what happens? Hopefully he repents, and if not, what?
Church.
The whole church, right? The entire body. So we're bringing in more people in the rescue mission. And our goal is to rescue the brother. And sometimes they are rescued, and sometimes they're not. They're driven out. But it's also a mission to rescue and protect those who he's sinning against in harmony, especially his wife in this situation. So now there's no way that he can keep it private. He can't hide it from the church. Everyone knows. They can not only seek to restore him, but be there to protect and support the wife if she's going through the difficulty of whatever this, if it's a drug addiction.
Yeah.
Well, how does that work if he doesn't listen when the whole church is...
Right, so... We keep going. So, right. So now he's graduated and he's publicly in the 1 Peter 3, right? He's an unbeliever who doesn't obey the word. Okay. So let's keep going too. Right. What's the next passage? Let's see. Brian, you want to read that in Romans 13:1?
Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God.
So that's, we're also, we have the, God has instituted the civil authority to protect. And so we can and should always call in civil authorities when if they're breaking the law in the terms of illegal drug abuse. This is especially like if there's any sort of abusive situation, right? If it's fits the legal definition of abuse, we definitely want to involve the authorities and get them involved. Because that's a way of protecting both the husband and the wife from one another from sinning further. Any thoughts about that? About the involving the civil authorities?
I think for abuse cases, that's what you do. You call the police.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is in other submissive relationships as well. Parents, child abuse, right? You don't just handle it in the church.
Yeah.
Right? You report it, you get the civil authorities involved, and you try and work together because God's instituted both authorities. And so we're going to make sure that in all those cases, we're trying to bring as much to bear as possible on the sinning person. What about Galatians 6:1? Let's see. Josh, want to read that one?
Yeah. Brethren, if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such one in spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you too will not be tempted.
Yeah, and this is helpful. It's instructive to those who are seeking to restore and correct, is that it gives us a kind of a warning, right? What's the warning it gives here?
Not get caught in the trespass that they are in.
Yeah, and I think you've talked about this before, how sometimes the most abusive men can be manipulative and kind of seek to get allies, people on their side, and right? He's specifically saying, guard yourself from these men who are going to be abusing and sinning, and look to yourself so that you're not going to be tempted to be involved in it, to get tied up in it. Right? I think that's many times when you hear these scandals of abuse of power in one sense or another, there's a sense in which people were trying to protect someone that they were close to. Right? And so this biblical idea is that the most protective thing is to expose and to confront and to seek to restore, not to hide and not to cover up. And so when you have this rule of submission, I think it's encouraging that you know that you have your pastors, your elders, your entire church, you have the governing authorities who are there to support you, to protect you, and to address and correct and rebuke your husband if necessary.
Yeah, I think there's a couple extremes too, like mm-hmm. sometimes if the person's caught in a trespass, like let's say your husband will do the drug situation, mm-hmm. and he just says, I promise to do better, we've got it, we don't need to bring people in, and just he'll make the wife feel guilty for mm-hmm. wanting to help him by bringing in other people who can. Mm-hmm. And I think the other one too is sometimes husbands and wives, like the wife will threaten to call the elders on the husband.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we've had that situation happen where calls the elders in on the husband almost as a way of controlling him too.
Mm-hmm.
And that purpose is not to restore the husband. That's to kind of get their way. And I mean, that's more of that happens less than the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to try to cover for the husband and feel like
mm-hmm.
you're betraying him if you bring other people into mm-hmm. it, but it does happen sometimes too.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's really good, it's helpful, is noticing, you know, in that passage, you're bringing in two or three witnesses which protect against both of those cases. If it's if there's no grounds for it, there aren't going to be any other witnesses mm-hmm. to bring in. But at the same time, if you bring in two or three, it stops it from being covered up.
Yeah.
So that's a crucial step kind of in that biblical restoring, is that if you're trying to restore and rebuke and correct and there's no response, you've got to get another witness in there to see what's going on. And also because they have see things that you won't see. It's really one of the key things. Okay, let's hit some scenarios, right? In each of the following situations, A through E, is the wife being submissive? And what alternative actions could or would you suggest to reflect what we've learned about? Linda obeys her husband. These are all imaginary scenarios. None of these things have ever happened that I know of,
yes.
Right, at all. Linda obeys her husband and believes in some biblical submission, but when he tells her to send the kids to public school, she refuses on the grounds that it will be harmful to them. What do you think? Is she being submissive? No. Okay, what should she do, though? She cares for the kids. She has some concerns.
Express your cares and say, hey, I'm worried about this. And at the end of the conversation, her husband says, I hear you, but I still think public school is the best choice. Then you say, okay.
Yeah.
Send them to public school.
Yep. This would hit really close to home because we've homeschooled our kids all the way up, and I've always taught in public schools as my profession. And what I found is that often when we have conversations, our perspectives are so different because of our experience. So I have lots of experience knowing what it's like in public schools, and she has lots of experience knowing what it's like in homeschool. But we have less contextual knowledge of what, I have less contextual knowledge of what homeschool looks like because I'm not there day to day. And she has less contextual knowledge of what it really looks like in the high school. So it takes sometimes a long conversation to figure out what's really happening in both places. But yeah, conversation, tremendous, yeah. All right, Claudia goes on a large shopping spree and neglects to tell her husband about the purchases, reasoning he probably wouldn't care anyway. Right, that's everybody. I don't care, just doesn't matter to me. Made of money. What do you think? Is that a good?
Yeah, we need the women to speak out.
Come on here.
Well, I think there's probably a difference between like, okay, we've got X amount of money and we need a new couch.
Yeah.
Your husband says, okay, go buy whatever you want.
Yes.
And you go and you spend the money and you buy a couch.
Yes.
Well, you've already agreed to spend that money.
That's
you know,
right.
If he asks, you tell him, but I'm not going to come home and be like, I spent this exact amount on
that's
the couch.
Right.
Because we'd already previously agreed.
That's right.
However, maybe she's taking this money out of savings, and you don't know the context. But
that's true.
Probably not a wise decision to do.
Yeah.
Probably should be discussed.
But
that's
it's
right.
Not disobedience because he hasn't said you may not spend money.
Yeah.
Way,
so there's a lot of.
It requires a conversation.
It requires a conversation
yes.
At some point, right? So I think we could read into this quite a bit of scenarios where it would be submission and where it wouldn't, based on what we know about the husband and the wife, their income, what they've discussed, what their roles are, again. And I think, yeah, on the extremes, you could get the, can I buy this, whatever,
yeah.
You know, like, I think you can handle it, right? Or the just, oh, all my paycheck was gone and the day after it came in, right? So. You guys ever have any money conversations at home? Yeah, we do. Yeah, it's always like, I think, what were we talking about? Like, was it the $2,000? You know, like it comes in. What do we do? Right?
Yeah.
It's always like, we have like six ways to spend it. You know, like, well, we only get to do one of those things. We can't because they're like, oh, we're gonna use this money for that.
Yeah.
A lot of times we've also like divided up. Okay, all right. Some of it's going to this, and some of it's going to that. Removing the priorities back and forth. Jennifer will submit to her husband, but only after she's satisfied with his reasoning for the directive. You say no?
No, that's not submission. I wouldn't even say it's submission if she's satisfied with the reasoning for it, because she has to have that. To do it, that's not joyful submission. That's agreeing and going along with it.
So, what would be better if she would like to understand his reasoning? What would be an obedient biblical way to address her desire to understand that?
Ask unassuming, open-ended questions.
Yeah. Can you explain what you're thinking? Why are you thinking about doing this? Right.
Yeah, I think a good way of phrasing it is help me understand.
Yeah.
So yeah. The issue is not like you have some explaining to do. It's just, I'm not sure if I get it.
Right.
And that's a very different posture.
Yeah. Yeah, not just saying that, but actually approaching it that way.
Yeah,
I just don't get what this decision is.
Yeah, I don't quite understand. I don't understand.
Yeah, and that's usually pretty helpful, I think, as a husband. There's been times where then you explain it, and it's coming out of your mouth, you're like, yeah, that doesn't sound very good to me either. No, now that you say it, now that I say it out loud, it's probably not the best.
Cryptocurrency doesn't make sense.
Yeah, Carissa, I said something the other day about how I thought we maybe should spend some money, and she goes, so you're going to do this, 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 then? No, that's a horrible idea. Okay, just check. Just check. So this one was funny, I thought. Susan's husband is rather quiet and shy, so when they're out in public, she tends to act as a spokesperson.
I think that's perfectly fine.
You're supposed to say that one.
Also, context. Have they determined that that's okay in their relationship? Does it, you know, has he told her previously, like, it really bothers me when you do that, you know?
Exactly.
It could be submissive, it could not be, or, you know.
Yeah.
If he's specifically told her not to and she's doing it, that's not submission. If he's totally fine with it, it doesn't bother him, you know?
Yeah, and I could see how it could work well, but I think it could easily, like, whoops, maybe he didn't, right? You accidentally... You'd have to be really tight together on.
Mm-hmm. There can be some slight words in a sentence that change it totally.
Change the meaning.
Yeah. It has no, it can be.
I think you have to think about.
You can get thrown off way out of context.
Yeah.
You kind of have to think about how it appears to other people too.
Exactly. Because
it can easily appear that she's the leader of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like if she's a spokesperson to his parents, that doesn't come off well.
Right. Yeah. That brings up a good point. I mean, oftentimes, one thing we've talked about is that when it comes to explaining decisions, we often talk to our own parents. I explain a decision we're making to my parents, and she explains it to her parents generally. And it just seems to go over better if they just naturally tend to believe the best about their own child.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not that either one of us is afraid to talk and explain the things, but I guess there's sometimes some wisdom in that. Yeah. 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 We talked about that a lot. Like, what does that mean? What does it look like to be the spokesperson? What about Sabrina's husband has made several poor financial decisions. So she hides their money in a secret savings account in the Caymans so that he will not make another faulty investment. Where are those millions hiding? No. Okay, so what should she do though, right? If he's like, I'm going to start this business and it fails, or he does this and it fails, or we're going to, you know.
Yeah. I think appealing to the expertise, like what was said before.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, maybe let's go talk to a financial advisor. Let's go talk to an investor. Let's go talk to somebody who knows how to handle money. And so it's not my word against yours, actually.
Right, bringing
There's
in the other witnesses.
On that particular subject that I can appeal to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like enacting the process on Matthew 18, essentially. It could be a situation where it's similar to that. Where.
Yeah. And it's tricky, I think. One of the tough things that we've talked about at home is the role of when the authority, or that be your husband or whatever, when they're doing something foolish, right, or not the best, versus something sinful. And so we don't have the same authority to kind of disobey when it's foolish as we might have when it's sinful. So the approach has to be a little bit different, a little bit more gradual or more careful, because in the end it may be that, you know, it takes a long time to change those foolish decisions because you have less authority to tell them you have to do this, you must, you're commanded by scripture to do this, and so you have to teach the teaching wisdom over foolishness sometimes takes more time and a different approach than rebuking sin.
I think the issue in that scenario is the word secret.
Yeah.
It's like if he's an impulsive gambler, it might not be a bad idea to take the keys of the bank account away from him for time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Mutually agreed upon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that there would be a place for maybe even approaching a pastor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
or an elder or some church leader is like, you know, before we do this, can we talk to somebody about this?
Yeah, and sometimes, like, I think it was interesting how you said, like, mutually agreed upon. I mean, oftentimes,
yeah.
The, like, if the husband's setting up internet filters, he may give the wife all the authority, the login and all that stuff, so that, you know, it's easier for him not being in control of his own accountability,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, I think another thing, too, is kind of have a built-in appeal plan.
What do you do?
Yeah, when I counsel people,
mm-hmm.
and the deal is, I tell them if one of you wants counseling, then make a commitment now that you will go in, that you'll get counseling. And if the husband doesn't want it, the wife has permission to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you kind of have like a built-in appeal plan.
Yeah.
And granted, if it's abused, you know, I'll eventually figure
right.
that out.
Right.
Like if I'm getting a call weekly that my husband's not. Do you know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
I get phone calls sometimes where, you know, I'm just really concerned about my husband and he's not doing well spiritually. I was wondering if you could talk to him. I get on the phone. He's like, I know. And it
mm-hmm.
goes well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of the things you can do is just kind of have a built-in appeal plan. So if mm-hmm. he is spending all your money or something like that, says, I think we need to sit down for some counseling on this.
Yeah.
And if that's like, you guys all decide that together, a lot of times how people do that in the premarital counseling room, it can be, it's just a good safeguard.
Yeah, yeah.
That helps the wife feel more protected.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole, I think when you think about the issue, kind of wrapping up, is that one of the biggest issues with submission is that idea of the fear and the scariness of it. And I think all of us really have to, we're going to continually deal with that when it, because we're always in these created structures that God's placed in our lives where we are submitting to an authority. And in a sense, we know that, you know, these are not going to be perfect. I mean, we can always look to Christ submitting to God as the example, right? That's what we want it to look like. The Son submitting to the Father. And as much as possible, we do our part, right, as is fitting to the Lord. And then we have ways that God has put in place to deal with the times when those authorities need to be corrected or addressed. Okay. What do we know what our next?
I think we're doing leadership, so.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, I'll pray for us. It's been a good discussion. I appreciate all the comments. Father, I give you so much thanks and praise. It always amazes me, your creative mind, and how unsearchable is your wisdom and your judgments, and the way that you've created millions and billions of people to inhabit this planet, how you've created nations and governments, and how you've created churches with leadership, families, mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, children, just is mind-blowing. And I pray that as we just come to you each day, that we would trust you. Help us to bring our fears to you when we're afraid of the leadership of the government or our elders or our husbands, that you would help us to submit to them, to submit to you, and joyfully grow serving you and accepting in those times, if we do suffer, that it is for you and for your glory, and it helps us to be more like Christ, to suffer for doing good. I pray for those in leadership that they would make the best decisions and wise decisions, loving and honoring those whom they're leading and caring for. I pray that you'd be with us. Help us to bring glory to your name, and just to meditate and to reflect on your greatness together this morning. In your name, amen.